League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 18th of March, 2020. On the podcast today, Richard Hullihan, Chief Executive Officer of Polarian Imaging, P-O-L-X, his ticker there. And Richard discusses what the recent raise of £8.4 million will be used for and who took part in the fundraise. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about his strategy in the current volatile markets. It's been so volatile. So fast a drawdown has been, you know, one of the fastest ever. It's really scary. And, you know, if you are a new investor and you're thinking, wow, is this what it's like? No, it's not like this. It's generally not like this. But out of the back of this will be some massive opportunities. But for now, patience is needed. And if you have to switch off, switch off. You know, like I said, long term, it'll be fine. It'll bounce back. But just right now, we're in the eye of the storm. Okay, also on the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Richard Hullihan, Chief Executive Officer of Polarian Imaging, P-O-L-X, is ticker. Richard, thank you for joining me.
Happy to be with you, Justin.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It's the markets are scary at the moment, but you've come up with some very good news of late, and we'll dig into that. It's about a fundraise, and it's backed by some of you guys and a big company in Italy. So before we get into that, Richard, for people maybe not familiar with Polarian Imaging, just explain what you're all about, please, the business.
I will. We are a pre-market approval company. We are developing a new inert noble gas contrast agent for use with magnetic resonance imaging that fully quantifies and displays all aspects of pulmonary function. And so we're in our pre-approval range. We've just finished our phase three trials, and that's our story today.
Yeah, and like I said, I think I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn here, but pretty much seems like, you know, phase one, two, and three for any company going through clinical trials are the riskiest stage. So it seems like most of the risk is still risk, of course, but most of the risk is behind you now, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say that we've done everything a company can do to de-risk itself. So if you remember kind of the next level of the story here, we're a drug device combination. Mm-hmm. So that means we have a drug, which is our hyperpolarized xenon 129. Xenon, of course, is an inert noble gas. Mm-hmm. We put it through our system, our platform, and excite it. And then the patient inhales it, and we image it in an MR system. From a risk point of view, then an inert noble gas is a very nice place to be with respect to a drug because it has none of the unpleasant biological effects that many of the injectable contrast agents do for medical imaging. So that part of it is very well explained to regulators. And then on the other side, the device is very straightforward. It's a laser that excites the gas. So combined, the drug device looks pretty ordinary to regulators in that regard.
And just to put it in context for people, I mean, compared to what's out there at the moment, your images can, what, be, is it about 100,000 times more clear, more powerful than the standard?
Yep, so the happy fact is that when we hyperpolarize or excite xenon 129, we do get a 100,000-fold increase in the signal level of the xenon, so that when you breathe it in, and I encourage everybody to go to our website, you can see the videos under the investor tab of our investor conferences, or just look at the images on our website, and it truly does light up the lungs like a Christmas tree. It is astounding what we're able to display, and then we can talk a little bit later about the clinical utility of some of these things. But this finally brings the benefits of high-resolution, three-dimensional imaging to pulmonary medicine, because when the original inventions of CT and MR were rolled out to medicine in a very cruel twist of physics and physiology, pulmonary medicine was left behind. Mm-hmm. And so now we're finally bringing the tools to pulmonary medicine that all the rest of medicine has had for the past 30 years.
Yeah, and I got to point out, when you say there, you know, it's able to light up the lungs, you know, because it's, and also compared to, you know, standard or what's used at the moment, it's non-harmful, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, it is very much so. And I think anybody who does a little bit of reading, even in the lay press, would see that one of the big concerns in imaging are the kind of latent discoveries of unforeseen effects of contrast agents in patients, particularly the older set and the younger set. Some of these things have turned out to have not quite gone the way that the original investigations thought they might. And so people are looking for ways to establish these functional information that comes from contrast agents in a way that's not harmful to the human body.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I said next thing, next sort of hurdle is the FDA clearance and approval. But of course, you've raised money, a good chunk of money, especially in this market. So 8.4 million, and some of the guys from the board put more money in. And also, tell us about this company called Bracco Imaging. Who are they?
Yeah, so if you remember our story, our history has been kind of milestone-based fundraising. Mm-hmm. So we IPO'd, raised money to run the trial. We then raised money to get through to submission. So we're poised on the edge of that. We're about to have our pre-NDA meeting with the FDA. And now we're raising money for commercialization and launch. In that process, remember, we had a strategic investor previously with us, the company NuChem Isotopes, who specializes in the global sourcing of high-value isotopes. Now we have, in this round, coming Bracco Imaging, who is a global supplier of contrast agents in medical imaging. So we now have two strategic investors in the business, in addition to some of our cornerstone funds. And so we're quite happy about being able to attract that kind of investor.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's talk about, what are you doing in the meantime between now and FDA clearance? When is that likely to happen?
Yeah, if you remember the timeline at a high level, the timeline goes something like this. We will be having a pre-NDA meeting. We did publish an RNS about that following the readout of the trials. This was a new bit of insight that our regulatory consultants had advised us. Anybody submitting to the FDA has the right to request a pre-NDA meeting. We had previously, based on the simplicity of our submission, decided not to do that, just in the interest of time and cost. But over the course of the clinical trial, as it unfolded, as you probably observed there, there were some fairly spectacular misadventures with people making submissions. And our analysis said that it would have been prudent had many of them requested the pre-NDA meeting, and they had not. So we're bringing this work on ourselves deliberately. It's going to take a little bit of time, about a calendar quarter. It's going to cost a little bit of money. But I think in the end, it allows a company and the FDA to just clear the decks of any dangling questions or unanswered questions or clarifications required. And you would know, just in the course of normal life, you get email kind of threads from colleagues and associates that contain three unrelated questions. Someone answers two, one of them never gets addressed, and nobody ever gets back to it, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you want to make sure that none of that has happened. And by the time you get to the point of a submission, I mean, you've been having meetings and dialogue with the FDA for 2 or 3 years. Yeah. So it's a great opportunity just to clear the decks, get everything squared up so that when the submission goes in and they open it up, they go, aha, exactly what we were looking for, as opposed to, oh, you know, this wasn't quite right. So yeah. Just that's the scheme. And then the FDA has, according to kind of regulatory specifications, they have 10 months to consider our new drug application. And then we are, of course, also, if you remember, there's a sub theme or a subplot here, which is we have the opportunity to request a Hatch-Waxman protection for our drug, which is a regulatory grant of market exclusivity on the front end of commercialization, which spans some 5 years plus a bit. And so we are making that request, and so that gives them another 60 days. Mm-hmm. So all in, 12 months from submission.
Yeah. And just tell people, if they have no idea of this area, sector, but the potential here, commercial potential.
Yeah, so there are a couple of kind of free market research notes out there on us, which show the scale of this. The real beauty of the Polarian story is it would be a great story if we had simply invented the device that polarizes xenon, because it's a capital equipment business with great margins, and it looks a lot like CT or magnetic resonance imaging on paper as a business model. But in our case, in addition to being able to sell equipment to hospitals, kind of point of sale capital equipment transactions, we then get to sell the drug, because what gets approved is the inseparable pair. So that means that instead of getting paid once by a hospital for a piece of equipment, we then also additionally get paid every time the system is used. And so a few years into the business model, the drug revenue line eclipses the capital equipment line and simply never looks back.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvelous stuff. Well, Richard, as always, I'm going to ask you for those three reasons. If someone is listening to this, likes the progress you're making here, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
We shall, and we'll be perfectly consistent with our prior expression of these. The first thing is, this is simply an unmet need in medicine. There are so many patients out there with pulmonary dysfunction, and they're simply not getting the help from medicine that they should, and we're here to solve that problem. The second thing is, as an investment case, this has been de-risked in three different ways. One, the technology side of this, we're out there and operating in 25 of the major academic teaching institutions on the planet. The technology works. The second thing is the regulatory side. We passed our phase 3 trials. We're headed into our pre-NDA meeting, so we view our regulatory risk as very manageable. And now, finally, on the investment side, we're a small company, but we have two really important strategic investors in the business, great cornerstones in addition to our funds. And then third, there is significant upside to our opportunity. The research notes out there in our initial market strategies are U.S. only, and they're pulmonary medicine only. And we've already disclosed in RNSs and on our website the fact that we expect other applications to follow, other parts of the human body, and that all of this applies equally, if not at higher levels, in other geographic markets around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look at it on a really basic level, I mean, like I said, lots of potential just in America, but America has a population of 300 million. The planet is 7.7 billion people. So, of course, not every one of those is a target, but what I'm saying, you can see the scale of potential there. So,
Population demographics and disease are agnostic to latitude and longitude. Yeah. And in fact, there's a case to be made that there are some other very large markets that have poorer air quality and higher prevalences of things like smoking, lower public health, and so those markets, in theory, would be even higher.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Marvelous stuff. Richard, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. I enjoyed it all, as always.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You're right, John. Is the office busy there?
Yes, I'm good.
What's the office like?
There's hardly anyone in the office today. Most people are working from home. So I'm in the office and it feels like self-isolating just by being here. But I'm fortunate in that I can cycle to work and not see anybody.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I gave up the radio about 4 or 5 years ago now. And so I've been doing this pretty much. I've been self-isolating for 4 years. So it's a big... I didn't realize what an upheaval it is for everyone because I've been doing it pretty much, you know? So it's but it's odd seeing, just watching TV, watching CNBC or Bloomberg, where everyone now is in the living room, reporting from the living room, which is very odd, you know? But it's got to be done because, like I said, we haven't got a vaccine. We have to stop the spread of it somewhere. And the only effective way is social distancing, isn't it, you know? We don't know how deep it'll go, how long it'll go on for.
Well, the Chinese are telling us that they have no new cases in China today, and you've got to, if that's true, and that's a big if, you have to wonder how they have managed to achieve that without a vaccine and without proper medical cures. So it's an interesting world. They say they're trying to help the rest of the world, but. You do have to, they also say they're not going to, they're suggesting they're not going to throw a lot of new money at it because they don't want to bail out the world. One feels a bit of a negotiation with Donald Trump coming on and perhaps using the stimulus that they will need or that they might need as political capital. But certainly we are adding up every day. The amount of money being pledged, and we're at $4.6 billion worth of stimulus packages in different forms. We're already beyond...
4.6 trillion, you mean, not billion?
Oh, trillion, yes.
Yes, I was going to say, because we did $330 billion in loans, and I know the Americans went for $1 trillion. So,
yes.
But the market's not convinced yet, are they? Because the thing is, you see, John, I mean, I've just said on Twitter just now, you know, my portfolio now is in lockdown. I was fortunate enough to, I'm over macro a lot, and I think it's good to be over the macro as well as the micro. If you just focus on individual stocks, I think you can come unstuck. And I was looking at this, you know, a while back, and I was really bearish for pretty much 2 years, but I still needed to invest. But I was sort of had cash, and I was ranging from anything from 20% up to 60%. And then recently, it started coming down, so I started upping my cash. But the thing is, I'm seeing all new sectors getting affected by this. So today, sports, football come out and said they maybe have trouble if they, you know, have to shut down in matches for so long. And that's, you know, if you look at all sports, you know, all sort of where you need a crowd, anything that are going to come unstuck. And of course, you've got restaurants, you've got bars, you've got travel, you've got tourism, you've got events and conferencing. It reaches, and those supply chains coming off that as well, servicing those industries, it's massive. How far and how deep does this go? Now, hopefully, we'll get it done within 2-3 months. But then you'll have, like I said, there'll be plenty of opportunities. But which companies will survive? And that's why there's no point jumping in now, because normally on a recession, you'll always get one fairly decent-sized company that goes through, you know, and that'll send a shockwave through that entire sector. So it's being patient, isn't it? And my saying now, and trying to get this into my head, is have patience until we see less patience, you know, because at the moment in Europe, the epicenter numbers are pretty much still grinding up, you know, we're going to wait, and America, of course, still grinding up. So I think until those plateau or come down, sit on cash, you know, that's what I'm doing.
Well, I think markets overshoot situations
like this. Oh, yeah,
they have.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's an awful lot of shorting going on in the States. And we can see this because they've got record positions on the S&P ETF, which is interesting. Now, what I think the funds over there are doing is they're buying the ETF and then shorting individual stocks within the index. So So they're using this as a strategy, and they may be doing this in other ways as well. But there are certain sectors that are going to get hit very, very hard, and then there'll be other sectors that are much more defensive in this environment. So utilities shouldn't be overly impacted, for example. So airline, we know that airlines, probably property funds, anything in retail, leisure, all that sort of stuff is going to have a terrible, terrible time. But So you could actually, in fact, in my view, sell the entire index and just buy the better quality stocks, or you could buy the index and sell the stuff you think is going to go bust.
And, well, do you know what?
There's a trade there.
Yeah. Do you know what? I genuinely think, because this lockdown, you know, people being quarantined, like we are at the moment, but my son with a health condition, and we are sort of in lockdown, the family, and we've had to cancel a holiday. And I tell you, the first thing we want to do after the lockdown is book a holiday. I think the holiday it'll boom, but of course, certain companies may not survive this the next 2-3 months. So I think there's plenty of opportunities in the sectors have been hit the hardest, you know, plenty of opportunities there. I think they'll rally the strongest because people want to get out and have a drink and go to a restaurant and go on holidays. And so those things, but there again, you've got to wait a while because some of them may not exist, you know?
Well, yeah, and you're correct there. I mean, a lot of holiday companies were kind of on the edge anyway. We saw Thomas Cook go down not long ago. We saw Flybe, the airline, go down before this even really got going. So companies that are... I think the government will help companies to a limited degree, but they're not going to bail out anything that they thought was vulnerable. Mm. And what will happen is that the staff and the managers will get back together again in new businesses really very amazingly quickly at the end of this. So I think we should expect to see a very large reorganization of what's going on. And I think there's going to be some very profound stuff going on in the property market, because we've already seen one of the major UK shopping mall companies warn that they're into with their debt service. And now we've seen Aviva come out and say that they have problems with one of their property funds. So I think there's going to be a lot more of that happens. Clearly, we don't know how that's all going to pan out, but we can see that these are newly developing problem sectors.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I think at the moment it could be, you know, we could have one of those. If we start seeing, like, I keep an eye on the daily figures from Italy. And in the last 2 days, let me just get the chart up here. In the last 2 days, so there's been death-wise, daily death count has gone down the last 2 days. So that's a good start. If that's not a blip and it starts to become a trend, that's good, because they've locked it down. And we know then, you know, following on from China, how long this is going to take from, you know, initial death to a peak. And then obviously it's going to get better. So I think, you know, until we see that, have a bit of patience, because we don't know what's going to happen. Like you say, in these kind of stress times, you know, weak companies fall over. And then other companies rely on those companies also get affected. So it's just having a bit of patience. But I've never experienced anything like this. And I watched, I don't know if you've got Netflix, John, but I highly recommend a series called Explained on Netflix. And today I was watching, and the next pandemic came on, which is, and Bill Gates was in it. And Bill Gates has been talking about this for a long time. And he said, basically, don't worry about, you know, obviously do things to help climate change and worry about meteors. But the thing that's going to wipe the human race out, if anything does, will be the virus. He said, and that they're also becoming increasingly active. There's more of them happening. And they always pretty much come from animals. And so it's very scary that we should be having a, you know, global task force really set. And we sort of have, but, you know, because they take a while to come around, they're very unpredictable, we aren't really set up. When they do sort of hit straight away, they think, oh, hang on, you know, it's hard to rehearse for something, isn't it? It doesn't come around every day or every week. It comes around every 5-10 years, you know?
Well, we have had a few rehearsals with SARS and H1N1 and things like that, and this one's
no
more serious.
Yet. No vaccines for those either. It's nuts, isn't it?
Well, there are vaccines. Certainly, there are vaccines for the coronavirus.
It's been trialed, but the therapeutic helps, aren't they? So they're not vaccines; it can suppress it and mitigate the sort of issues with it. But for SARS and MERS, there's still no vaccine. SARS pretty much petered out, which is very odd. And it's scary. It's affected every corner of society, isn't it? This virus.
Well, the latest thing I was reading is that an awful lot more people have had the virus than has been recorded, maybe 5 to 10 times as many people, which would bring down the mortality rate a lot, and would account for why China is suddenly seeing a lot less of this, in that the herd immunity is perhaps having an impact. But I mean, we're not healthcare experts. I mean, we do have a healthcare team at SP Angel. and we've included a couple of their comments in our morning note on regeneration advances and Synergen. But I leave it to them to comment to you. But there's certainly some very exciting stuff going on with development of tests for the virus and vaccines. And so this stuff is on the way. It's just a question of how fast it gets fast-tracked. Now, I think in the current environment, stuff will happen much quicker than it ever used to.
Yeah.
The experts say, oh, maybe it takes 1 to 2 years to get a vaccine approved. But in an emergency situation, you find people who will be willing to trial these things. And maybe somebody gets lucky with it. But, you know, we're in a world where you make your own luck. And there have been enough people working on these things for the last 10 years to speed things up dramatically.
Mm-hmm. I believe in the power of AI as well. You know, we, like I said, it's the humans, if anything, so ingenious. And going, you know, in every form of life, essentially, you know, is a survival of the fittest to a certain extent. And people criticised yesterday Chancellor saying, why are you giving loans? And so you can't just give away free money. And first of all, you can't, if you've got a weak business anyway, you can't sort of prop it up, because that'll make the economy worse in the long run. But, you know, a good company that needs short-term cash flow can deal with a low interest loan, is a lifeline, you know. But I mean, a weak company won't anyway, you know. So, but yeah, I think, have you seen those things on AI talking about how AI has spotted cancer in humans faster than you know, humans or anything like that? So I do believe that tech will help us a lot, you know. But at the moment, it's just phenomenal, just the effect this has had, you know. It's going from one case and just really going across the world and just taking everything down. And what I'm worried about is that, I mean, let's be honest, China and America, America then China, biggest economies in the world, it's affected China, now it's not so bad. America, the figures are still going up, that's the worrying thing, because they're the biggest economy in the world. But I've noticed it's the second most populous country in the world, India. Right, they've reported 148 cases, 3 deaths, and I'm thinking that's got to be underreported massively. And if that starts spreading through India, it'll be another problem, because, you know, the population is so many more times bigger than ours, 20 times bigger than ours, and we've got like 10 times the amount of cases. It's like ridiculous.
Well, it may be that the virus doesn't survive so well in the hot Indian climate and the humidity.
Hopefully. Yeah,
but it's. It's not summer in India just yet, although clearly it's closer to the equator than we are. Mm. But it may be that the Indians have been more exposed to more disease over the years and have better, more robust immune systems. And for anyone who's lived and worked in London for many, many years, one would expect the average Londoner to have a slightly more robust immune system as well, just by virtue of the fact we've been exposed to so much on the underground, coming to work every day.
So, yes. As far as, you know, what would you, I mean, like I said, I think at the moment patience is what we need to have. But is there anything you'd be looking at, I mean, you know, in your field?
Talking about my own personal strategy, and I am looking to invest in the market. And like everybody else, I want to invest in things that I know and I like and I feel comfortable with. So what I'm saying to people, and this is exactly what I will be looking to do myself, is to invest in Rio Tinto, and then clients of ours, Bushveld Minerals, Arc Minerals, Blue Jay Mining, and then on the oil stocks, some Union Jack Oil, Rock Rose Energy, Gulf Keystone, Hurricane Energy. So I'm looking to actually buy into some mining, some oil and gas, and probably some of the building companies, maybe building materials and some of the house builders, because I'm sure there'll be more activity in that space when as the government tries to restart the economy. It's very hard to catch a falling knife, yeah, as we say in market terms. But I'll be looking to invest a third and then another third and another third of my cash. Mm. And I'll probably do that quite soon, because when I look at these share prices, they are artificially low, as all the professional investors, many of the professional investors are standing back. But there comes a point when things are just too cheap and such wonderful value, and one takes a 12-month view when this pandemic should be over and done by, And then I see many of these things actually recovering very well. I mean, I can see that certainly in 1 or 2 years, we should be back to where we were in January again, if not higher, because there'll be so much more cash in the world, so much more stimulus, probably maybe a bit of extra inflation. And I do see a strong recovery driven by all that quantitative easing and stimulus. So for me, it's the buying opportunity of a century, and I think it's just a question of when we get stuck in.
Mm-hmm. No, I tweeted yesterday. I said, listen, and my friends there on our WhatsApp group are sort of, you know, can't look at their portfolios. And I said, this was annoying if you don't have cash. And they literally, because I said, within the next 12 months, you're probably going to see the best opportunity for making money that we've seen in the last 10 years. Because I look at my charts and pretty much every company I'm getting alerts on that's saying oversold. Now, obviously, it has to bottom out, but it's an opportunity, you know. And I, in fact, one of the positive things that come out of this pandemic, John, I just see they've stopped filming EastEnders, which is a good thing, because let's be honest, you know, we real life at the moment is more miserable than EastEnders. We don't need that. So we don't need EastEnders. We've topped it. We've topped EastEnders with misery, haven't we? Let's be honest.
I think we have, but it's very important news, and it's important that we follow the government advice, and I'm very pleased to see so many people actually taking notice of it.
Yeah, marvellous, John. I better let you go. I can hear the phone ring in the background. You're the only guy manning the phone, so thanks for that, fella. We'll check in and speak to you next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, BP. Down 6.5% every day. The stocks are down. At four, Eddie Straubat Logistics. That's ESL. Oh, it's up today. That 29.2% up to 7.3 pence. I think off the back of I think something that Boris Johnson or the Chancellor said about helping logistics companies. At three, Synergen. That's SNG, ticker there, up 0.8% to 24.7 pence. At two, Cineworld, of course, had a massive sell-off, people not going to cinemas. It's had a bounce. The bounce today is 51%, the price 32.42. And number one, Royal Dutch Shell, again, down £9.36. Wow! That is, I didn't think I've ever seen this below £10 in the financial crisis. I don't think it was that low, is it? Let me just check. RDSB. By the way, if you are thinking of investing in Royal Dutch Shell, it's this, you get RDSB and RDSA. Now you need to go for the B ones. If you're anywhere else in the world, I think pretty much it's the A version. But for dividends purposes and tax purposes, it's B you need to go for. Let's have a look at this. Where did it go down to in the financial crisis? It didn't. Wow. 31, it went down to, let me just, it's about 13 quid, 11, 12, 12. So that is low. That's the lowest it's ever been for as long as I remember. It's phenomenal. Okay, and top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, it is Vast Resources, Beta Player, Project Update. At four, Egdon Resources, Wrestle Development Update. At three, Live Comedy Group, Paddington Bear themed Brick Live Tour. Hopefully get the guys on the podcast very soon. At two, Integumen, 3-year, $3.75 million Bacteria product agreement or production agreement. And number one, Union Jack Oil, Wrestle Oilfield Development, economically robust. And that was at what, 17 bucks, 17, yeah, 62 a barrel. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.